Blog Talk Radio.
60 years professional and private stock investing experience. Two-time best-selling investment author. Developer of the world's most profitable stock timing systems, Sidney Tremaine is here to help you to take charge of your financial future. On your side, Sidney Tremaine.
I am so excited. Every Monday, I think we can well label our Mondays Financial Mondays now, because we have been getting some Harvard insight into our finances with none other than my friend and colleague, Mr. Sidney Tremaine. Sidney, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you, Daphne. And you?
I am wonderful. It got a little warm here today. I was able to go out without my jacket, so I'm good. It was wonderful, 45 degrees.
Well, so, good for you.
Yeah, so today is the day when we put our legs up and just relax and jot some notes down about mutual funds, right?
Yes, Daphne. I thought we'd talk about fees and commissions and some things that our listeners might not know about that they should know about.
Wonderful.
Why you shouldn't buy mutual funds near the end of the year. Go ahead.
Before you go into that, I want to remind the listeners that towards the end, Sidney will give you his email information. I want for you to send the questions in, because he's going to put some time each week in, each class he has, to answer your questions. So you need to get the questions coming in to him. So you have the microphone, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I'm not going to make any bones about it. I'm not a great fan of mutual funds in most situations. In my view, there's just one way that they should be used, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But the main reason I don't like them is the fees. You know, a lot of people, more people probably have mutual funds than ever have stocks, and that's why I thought I'd talk about funds this week. But many people who have been investing in mutual funds, I see, have been disappointed in them, disappointed in the returns. One of the things that funds attract, or the sort of people that funds attract, are people who want to save, want to make some return on their money, but really don't know very much about investing. That is the typical mutual fund investor. And I was surprised to find out a couple of years ago from one of their reports, the average mutual fund investor has $120,000 in three different funds, which was quite a surprise to me. But one of the things that people usually don't know about is all of the fees. Salespeople are supposed by law to reveal all of the fees that there are. And many people think that the only fees are the commissions up front, or what's known as the back-end load, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But they think that that's all there is, and that isn't true at all. There's about three other different fees that people pay without being necessarily told about them by the salespeople. The sellers explain the front and back end commissions, but they don't go into these other things. And I'm going to pull back the curtain on those things.
Before you pull the curtain back, why are these vendors deceiving the public? Because that's deception. Why aren't we told up front? Is this information only in the fine print? Because we won't read
some
it,
of
or
it
they
is
are
in
deliberately.
Yeah, some of it's in fine print. It's in every annual report, and it's in the back with all the fine print stuff that nobody reads. You know, those great big thick brochures that have the chairman's comments in the beginning and a little bit about the company. And you don't read it. Yeah, you throw it out, which is unfortunate in some ways. So that is there by law. It is there in the prospectus by law, And by law, the broker or mutual fund salesperson is supposed to draw your attention to that. My experience, most forget to do so. Whether they do so deliberately or not, it's not my place to say. But obviously, if you keep talking about fees, you're really talking yourself out of some commissions if you're a salesperson. That's my opinion on that, at least. But let's talk about the ones, first of all, that people know about. And that's the front-end commission and the back-end, the rear-end load, they call it. Both of those, or either one of those, goes to pay the salesman's commission. It doesn't go to the company at all. The back-end one is where you pay a commission if you leave the fund within a certain number of years. And the purpose of that is to keep you with the fund for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Because while you are with the fund is making a profit from your money.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't realize how much goes to that. Say a back-end load fund where you don't pay a commission up front. You pay it only if you leave in a certain number of years. I've got some figures, and I'll try not to bore you too much with them. One of the sets of fees that you pay as an owner of a mutual fund are the expenses of the fund, the advertising expenses, the paper clips, the office, the whole bit. And that's on average for a fund that invests in stocks is around 1.5%. Let's suppose that the load, the commission that's going to go to the salesperson, and in this case you're not paying it up front, is 5%, and the return on the investment is 10%. Let's suppose those three things. Expenses of 1.5%, a load or commission of 5%, and a return of 10%. And in this case, we're going to talk about a circumstance where you're not paying that 5% up front. If you leave in the first year, you will have made on a $10,000 investment at 10%, you'll have made $1,000.
Right.
Fees would come to $702 if you leave in 1 year, which would be a silly thing to do, you know. But
exactly.
So people don't usually, they usually stay in.
Mm-hmm.
The profit after those fees, you remember your investment made $1,000. You get to keep $298.
Oh, so where
that's
the rest of the 700 and something goes?
That's
in
all the fees? Yes. Because now you're paying the 5%. Now, let's suppose you say 5 years, when we'll suppose also that the fees are no longer payable after 5 years. So your profit before the fees at 10% is $6,098.
Mm-hmm.
The fees are $1,885. That's 30% of what you made. Your profit after the fees is $4,213. If you stay 20 years, so you should have much more profit, right?
Yes.
And
this is, you know, this affirms what you've been saying for the past 2 weeks, that we should always think long-term.
Yeah, you should think long-term, but you're also going to find out why I don't like mutual funds. Your profit at 10% before the fees will be $57,153. $57,153. On a $10,000 investment. The fees will be $17,058. Your profit then is $40,095. You pay in fees 29% of the profit you make.
Wow.
Wow. That's if you don't have to pay the fees, the 5% load, the commission. And at 20 years, you would not. But you had to stay there, and obviously the company made some profit from you.
Mm-hmm,
if
mm-hmm.
you pay the if you pay the fee up front, you're still making $57,153. But then the total fees, for assuming that all the fees are the same as the last example I gave you, the total fees would be $19,563, and your profit $37,590. Your share that they've taken out of your profit is 34%.
Mm.
Now, you're not told about the management fees and the expense fees and all of those things. That typically, you're not told about those and you're supposed to be. That is one of the reasons I don't like mutual funds. The other
and
one
a
is,
lot of
no
people
control.
Don't know all of this information.
Oh,
that's
most
I'm
of them don't. In my experience, most people don't know that.
Wow.
It's why sometimes we should look at the small print.
But I think we are so impatient, you know? And we just, like, depend on the brokers to just guide us blindly, really. We don't want
to do our
due diligence to find out what we need to know.
Look, most people don't know enough to do the due diligence. I don't know enough to stumble over my tongue either, but most people don't know enough. Well, I hope that at least our listeners know a bit more now and will ask the
question.
Oh,
questions. Yeah, thanks to us. Yep, I hope they know.
It's not just, but the question isn't just, well, how much are the fees? Because you'll be told the commission, the 5% part. And what you need to ask is, what are all the other fees? You don't need to know the names. All the other fees.
Other ones. That's right. Yes. You can number them so long as you know what to expect.
Exactly. And your salesperson is going to squirm. At least I think so.
Exactly, because not very often they are asked those questions.
Well, he might not want to answer them, but he's going to have to if you ask.
That's right.
So that's fees, and we're talking a large slice. We're talking about a third of the profit that your money makes. So the firm, in one way or another, keeps that or spends it. You know the advertising you see at the just before tax time, when money's going to the IRAs and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, who do you think pays for that? It's not the company.
Oh, it's the
There's
investor.
There's a fee for that. It's included in the fees.
That's right.
Every
You're
paper clip
right.
they use is included. Everything is included. So they really have no expenses. The investor in the fund has all the expenses. There's another thing to worry about. And that's taxes. Making money is one thing, but keeping it is the other thing.
That's right.
You have to not only pay attention to the investment, you have to pay attention to what taxes you might pay. With a stock, I'll tell you this, you lose the capital gains taxation ability if you sell a stock within less than a year. You'll pay your full marginal tax rate if you do that. Otherwise, it's a capital gain, any profit that you make. But with mutual funds, it's a bit different. A fund must distribute all of the gains that it makes on the investments. It has to do that or pay corporate tax on it. And they don't want to do that. So toward the end of the year, usually just a few days before the end of the year, most funds distribute any profits they've made during the year. Now, here's the thing. supposing you buy your mutual fund in December, and it made profits early in the year, and made no profits toward the end of the year. It's made no profits since you bought your shares, your units.
Yes.
You pay the tax on the profit that was made earlier in the year. Not the person who owned the funds at that time. You do. Because you own them at the time that they are distributing the profits. You might not make any money, but you're going to pay the tax. So a little tip toward the end of the year. Toward the end of the year, do not buy mutual funds where they're going to be profits distributed. That's another little thing. Now, I'm sounding awfully negative on mutual funds. There are some good points about them. One of them is called dollar cost averaging. Well, that's a bit of a mouthful. I'll try and explain it to you. You cannot do this with individual stocks, because with mutual funds, you can buy fractions of a share or a unit. You can buy fractions. So I worked out some figures earlier today to talk about. In fact, I worked out some figures on a couple of things. Dollar cost averaging was one of them. A lot of people invest in funds on a monthly basis. They're saving through funds, and I think that's a very good idea. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But when the market is going down and the value of your mutual fund shares is falling, putting money in monthly rather than in one lump sum is an excellent idea. Let's take two people. We'll call them Sam and Samantha, just for confused people. Sam has $3,000, and he puts his $3,000 into a mutual fund at $27 a share. I don't know how many shares that works out to, but somebody can do the math. Samantha, on the other hand, doesn't have $3,000. She has, but she's able to save $100 a month. So in the first month, the shares are $27, and she buys 3.7 shares with her $100.
Mm-hmm.
The next month, the shares have gone down to $26. Now, Sam has lost some money because he's paid $27. So he's lost a bit of money there. Samantha also loses money. She puts in another $100 at $26 a share. And her total value then, is instead of $200, is $196.30. I'm not going to go through all of the months and give you all of the figures. But the shares fall and fall and fall and bounce a little bit. And I'm just looking at the figures here. Go down to $18. And Samantha's still investing her $100 a month, and Sam is, very uncomfortable because his $3,000 is almost half of that now. Samantha has lost money too. At $18, she's had $1,400 invested, and her value is only $1,103. However, eventually there's a recovery. And the shares go back up gradually, back to $27. And I guess that's 30 months. I haven't numbered the months, but months. They've gone back up to $27. So now both of them have invested $3,000. Samantha at $100 a month, and Sam all at the beginning at $3,000. Sam has $3,000 back again after being invested for 30 months and sweating about it. Samantha is more clever. She has $3,511.96 because she was investing all the way down and losing at that time. but when the shares came back to break even, she was showing a profit on those shares she bought for less than $27. That's dollar cost averaging. It's something you can do with a mutual fund you cannot do with stocks. Because with a mutual fund, you can invest a small amount of money each month, you know. And that is, from my money, or my thinking at least, one of the very good advantages of mutual funds. You still have to be careful with them. I don't like them as long-term investments.
Okay.
You know, but it works.
Yeah, you know, we just have to know how to access the information before we go in, because once you're in, it's hard. You pull out and you're losing. You can lose everything. So you have to understand what you're getting into.
You have to. If you've got questions, Daphne, I'm happy to answer them. You think the readers might want the listeners might want to...
You know, as I want for us to learn, and I want the people to listen and ask the questions, because right now we are all at our preliminary stages, and I think when we get into the second series, when we can study everything that you have delivered in this first series, then we are going to be ready to ask questions, because right now we are novices, you know?
I hope that people do ask questions. There haven't been any in this past week. Because I tell you, it helps me when they ask questions, because then I know what people need to hear about. Otherwise, I'm going a little bit blind here. I mentioned that mutual funds were great for saving. Now, a lot of people, especially these days, things are pretty hard, will say, you know, well, we have no money to save. And I've mentioned this, I think, in a previous session, how it is possible to save. I think that most people, if they really examined it, could save $6.67 a day. Now, that's a small amount.
The discipline. We don't have the discipline.
Yeah. $6.67.
Most people spend $10 something for coffee per day.
Sure.
And they add that up, you know, it's a lot of money.
Daphne, $6.67 a day is $200 a month. And I'm going to show you what $200 a month can do. And I worked out two things. The stock market, with its gains and then its losses, averages around 10%, including dividends, every year. Now, I'm not sure whether it's easy to find a mutual fund that averages that, certainly not in recent years. In fact, a lot of people's retirement hopes have been dashed by the fact that the market has gone up and gone down and gone up and gone down again. And those who stayed in a mutual fund invested in stocks really didn't gain. In fact, they quite probably lost because of the fees. But I took as 10% a target for when I was working out some figures earlier today. First of all, how are you going to save that $200 a month? And I mentioned this before. I talked about a woman that came into my office once, and she was very concerned because she was broke, basically, and in financial trouble.
Yeah.
And I think it was affecting her marriage, because she was also telling me that her marriage was pretty rocky. So she came in looking for help from me. And I gave her two little black books, and I said, look, what I want you to do is this. I want you to write down every single penny that you spend, every single penny, and ask your husband to do the same thing for a month. At the end of the month, cross out all of those things that you can't avoid. You have to pay the rent or the mortgage or whatever that is, your bank loan for the car, or those things that are unavoidable that you have to pay. Cross them all off. Then I want you to look at what is important to your lifestyle. If you cut everything out, you're not going to keep up the program. You're going to give up very quickly. So what is important to your lifestyle? Cross that off too. So that you don't sort of put yourself in a straitjacket or in prison, you know? Now, one of the things that means is that when you don't put on the list groceries, whatever the price is, that's no good. I need you to put every single item on, because you're going to choose which ones are comfort foods that are important to your lifestyle and which ones are not important. Not just food, but everything. What's going to happen after you've gone through this twice is you finish up with a much smaller list. And these are things that two of you have said they are not important to you, not important to your lifestyle, and not essential. What I suggest happens there is that amount of money, however much it is, be set aside from the paycheck, and you can get the bank to do it. There's all sorts of different ways of doing this. Set aside in a separate account, or contribute it to a mutual fund.
You know something? I was listening to you speak now, and I decided I want to ask this question, because you are guiding us and teaching us to invest at the correct time. And my question is, in the time that we are waiting on the time to come around to invest, I want to find out, the money we are setting aside for that investment, is it safe for us to put it in the mutual fund until we're ready to invest it elsewhere? Or where should we put this money?
I think it's safe to put it in a mutual fund. But I wouldn't put it in a mutual fund as a long-term investment. There are different vehicles you can put it into in a mutual fund. I'm not sure about stocks this time. We are 5 years into the bull market, exactly 5 years. And that is getting to be a long period of time. I'm not saying that the stock market is going to start to crash tomorrow. It could, but I'm not saying that. It could go for another year or two. I have no idea. Nobody I know can tell the future, and I can't either. But I will tell you this. The bull market is getting a little old. The systems that I run say that we are close to the time when, on average, it ends. And so I'm nervous of it now. I have clients that want to invest now, but they are going to invest in stock positions that are already running, that are already partway through. I'm finding it difficult to explain what I'm trying to say. But they have goals that change each week for when to get out. And with that safety net and with a lot of care, and I'm still nervous about it, they could invest now. But how long that investment lasts is another matter. I don't know. It won't be very long, I don't think. Can you use a mutual fund? Yes. In fact, it's a good idea, because you can set a certain, you can tell them, this is how much I want to invest every month. But if you do that, here's what I would do, frankly, for somebody who is a beginner and doesn't want to be worried about, are they going to lose money next month? I would put it into one of their money market funds, which invests in treasury bills and a few other things that are a slightly higher rate of interest. The commission is zero. You don't pay anything. You get in or get out. So this is a temporary thing. It's just to build some capital so you can do other things with it later. And let me talk about this now. If on average you make 10%, if you're saving $200 a month, that's $6.67 a day. At the end of the first year, beginning of the second year, you'd have $2,400. Now, that doesn't sound very much, but you're going to add another $2,400 every year. And 10% on your the second year is $480 of interest or of gain of that 10%. So at the end of 2 years, you've got $5,280. Okay, I'm not going to go through all the numbers, but after 10 years, for example, you'd have $41,508 by saving $6.67 a day. Now, $6.67 is really nothing, but $41,000 is starting to be a little bit more than pocket change.
That's right.
In 15 years, you'd have $82,967 in some sense. And so it goes on. Now, at 25 years, you'd have just over $250,000, $257,000. Now, that isn't enough to retire on. So the next question is, well, what do you do? You could save more, perhaps. And that does come in because it's probable that incomes will rise in that period of time, and inflation averages long term about 3%. So you would think that incomes might also average about 3% or maybe a bit more. So your $2,400 that you're saving could be increased every year. I didn't do that with this table. Mm-hmm. But I did say, okay, what do I need to... Supposing I said I need $1 million to retire on, to be safe so I don't have to rely on the government, I don't have to rely on friends or charity or any of that stuff, as most people do. I think it's about 4% that don't have to rely on those things. So I looked at that and I said, okay, well, let's see if instead of 10%, we could make 15%. And I have to tell you that my own programs do way better than that, way, way better than that. But let's be a bit modest and say, okay, 15%. We're still going to save the $6.67 a day out of, you know, having worked through the list three times.
Mm-hmm.
And the only difference is that we've made it 15% instead of 10%. At the end of that 25 years, where before we had $257,272, we now have more than double that. $577,000.
Sydney, hold on a minute. We have 26 minutes remaining. I want to let the people in the chat room know that you can ask your questions. You can type your questions in the box. As a matter of fact, if you want to call in with your questions, that's okay too. Do either. Okay? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Do you have a number for them to call, Daphne?
646-915-8166. Go ahead.
Okay, we were trying to get $1 million to retire on. Now, I quoted a story recently on the website that more people of retirement age are now finding something else to do. I think many of them are starting businesses at home. Because they need the extra money. They can't really retire.
They're working at Walmart, too. Yep.
So since we didn't make the $1 million that we were looking for in 25 years, I said, okay, going to have to work a little bit longer at something. We're going to have to be able, we still need to be able to save $2,400 a month. And wherever that comes from, we need to work a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
You can have from your $6.67 a day, 1,022,964.73 in 30 years.
Wow.
Now, what that tells you is this. It's no good starting to save when you're 55. If you're 55, even if you've got your 15% and you save that same amount of money every day, at 55 to 65, you would have $54,771, which doesn't quite give you very much to retire.
Yeah, it's better than nothing, yeah.
So what this is saying is the earlier you can start to save, the better. You know, a 30-year-old, for example.
This information is a goldmine for the 20-year-olds that are listening to the program, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Or even a 35-year-old who's got 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know. The trouble with being 35 is you also have children to get through college and all those other things.
Exactly.
But, you know, for parents, how much do you give your kids every day? Or every week, or every month, you know?
Yep.
It is, as you said a little earlier on, a matter of discipline, a matter of wanting something enough. It is very, very easy to become a millionaire. Very easy.
It's the discipline. I know for me, it's my discipline, you know?
You have to start early enough. That's the problem. It takes time. You can't be a millionaire. I had a man come to my office, and he was 55.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to retire when he was 60. I think that was it. And I said,
years.
That's fine. Yeah. And so I said, fine. How much do you have now? And he said, well, I'm in debt. I'm negative. I've forgotten how much. He'd had a construction company. Got caught in some type of financial squeeze. I've forgotten what year that all happened. And basically lost his company. But instead of going bankrupt, which he should have done, there's a pride to not going bankrupt with many people. But he paid for his pride. He didn't go bankrupt. He paid all the people off that he owed. But he was going to pay for that forever in his retirement. It's unfortunate, but he'd have been better off if he'd just walked away from the debts. And he could have done that, I suppose.
A lot of people's pride and ego doesn't allow them to do that.
Yes, that's correct. And that was the case for him. But he paid for that pride. I had to tell him, look, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do to help you. There was nothing I could do. And, you know, the reason I remember him so well, I remember the people I cannot help.
Yeah.
Because that hurts me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to help everybody that I can. But there was nothing I could do to that poor man. So the good thing about mutual funds, having trashed them in the beginning, the good thing is that they offer a vehicle for people with not very much money to be able to begin to save.
Okay.
And once they've got some savings behind them, they can look at other options. And meanwhile, while they're saving, they can be learning some of the things that they need to know about for later. So that's the advantage of funds. You can use things like dollar cost averaging. You can save. You can still do this. Save $25 a month. I mean, little bits.
Mm-hmm.
You save what you can. You don't have to save $200. You don't have to. You can save anything you like. You know, I think the minimum is about $25, and some of them will have higher minimums than that. But
yes, yes.
If you look around, you'll find them. I'm not sure if there's any minimums for money market funds, and there are no commissions on those.
Yeah.
Now they don't make very much either. You know, 2 or 3%, but it's enough
okay,
to get
yeah,
you started.
Okay, yeah, that's not bad. Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, it's enough to get you started, and when the time is right, and I'll talk about when that is in a minute. When the time is right, if necessary, you can transfer from a money market fund into an equity fund, into one that invests in stocks. Now, when is the time right? The time is right when you think it's the worst time possible. Now, I know that sounds strange, but people invest, the majority of people invest at totally the wrong time. People are starting now to invest in stocks, which is why they're, you know, from not today, but in many days recently, at record highs.
Mm-hmm.
Because the individual investor is saying, oh, good, prices are rising, and the bad news is in the past, and everything's looking much better today than it did a few years ago. Now must be the time to invest. Wrong. This is the time that the institutions are starting to unload and get out of all of the stocks they bought when last time around everybody was panicking and selling them for dirt cheap. So this is the wrong time to invest. It's the time to keep your powder dry and keep as safe as you can. When everything looks absolutely terrible and you see the headlines on the papers, newspapers, and on television about investors panicking and stocks plunging and, you know, 300-point loss in the day or whatever. And particularly if you hear of the people on the trading floor talking about the panic among investors,
mm-hmm.
That's the time to invest.
Ah.
So the market isn't going to go to zero. It's already on sale when everybody's panicked because they're getting out. And the traders on the floor and the professional investors wait for that moment when there is panic on the streets. They wait because that's when they buy.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think the bankers are so rich? It's not because they cheat. It's not because they scam. It is because they know when to buy and when to sell.
They are informed. They are informed.
Well, they look ahead. And the average person looks at today's news. And today's news was looked at by the professionals 9 months ago. They're looking 9 months down the road. They're seeing everything rosy, everything wonderful in the economy at that time, and they buy today. And that's what pushes the market up. You know, it puzzles a lot of people. They panic to get out to be safe, to save what, the 50 cents that they've got left of every dollar. They panic, and they're wondering, why does the market go up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason is the institutions are buying. And one other thing, there's a method of investing to make money on the way down as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's called short selling. And what that involves is borrowing stock, which you can do through your broker, and selling the borrowed stock in the hopes that it's going to fall and you can buy it back at a lower price to return what you borrowed. That's called short selling. What happens at the bottom of the market that also drives it up, not just the institutions, but all those people who have sold short and must buy stock to repay the stock that they borrowed are in the market buying to do exactly that, to unwind their positions so that they can repay for the stock that they borrowed. You know, they borrowed 100 shares of something or other. They have to buy those 100 shares later to pay them back. So that is another influence on the market, turning it round, often very suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
Not always, but often quite suddenly. Often you'll see the market looks like a V at the bottom.
Oh.
Sometimes, though, there are all kinds of different things. Sometimes it looks like a W.
I have a friend, a couple, and her husband had took early retirement. And
mm-hmm.
he does a lot of investment online. And now I realize why he is always in front of the computer checking for different things. Now I understand why, because I didn't get it. I know he's always.
Some people
in front.
Do that. I don't, and our systems don't look. We'll talk next week about our systems, but there's one of the reasons that they are so simple. I knew at the time we were putting these together that there were a lot of disgruntled mutual fund holders who wanted to do something else but didn't have the experience or the interest to sit in front of a computer screen all day. I mean, that's to me, that's boring. And it's gambling. There's so many things wrong with that. So the systems that we built are built to be absolutely brain dead simple, and take 2 minutes a week to look after. That's it. I wanted to serve the people who really are interested in the mechanics of investing and the thrills and spills of it, but who nevertheless need more money to save for their retirement. Daphne, you cannot save for your retirement only from the money you earn as an employee. You can't do it unless you're earning millions. And by that time, your expenses are up too. You have to invest in some fashion or other to have enough money to retire with. And so that's how we built the systems. For people who don't know much about investing, want to be safe, obviously, but want to make more than the bank's going to give them. Does that make sense?
Yep, it does. Yes, it does. You have 11 minutes and 46 seconds remaining.
Well, I wish we had some questions.
Don't wish. Why you wish for questions? You're giving good information.
Well,
information. I mean, questions will come. You can only ask a question when you know what to ask. So for people are listening and they're taking the information in. Don't worry about it.
You asked what people should invest in now. I would avoid...
No. I ask while we're waiting to invest at the correct time. Where should we be holding that money? Yes.
Yes, I understand that. But... some people might say, oh, well, bonds are fairly safe. This is not the right time to invest in bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Interest rates are virtually zero. They will go up. It's a surprise to me they haven't already, as a matter of fact. They have to some extent, but not as much as I would have thought. There is going to be, unfortunately, in the States, huge inflation. There has to be, because of all of the money that is being printed by the Fed to buy government bonds and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Q1s and 2s and 3s. There must be inflation. You can't avoid it, because really you are... making the value of every dollar less in value than it was before you started printing money. And that means that the cost of the goods has to rise. The cost of the goods that you buy has to rise. There has to be inflation. It can't be avoided. When that happens, the government, their response will be to raise interest rates drastically. You remember probably, and I'm not sure what they were in the States, but I remember in Canada, the rates went up to 21%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was a deliberate move by government to mm-hmm. quell inflation at that time. We had stagflation.
Mm-hmm. You know, Sydney, I got to be honest to you. It wasn't until last year that I really and truly start paying attention to investment. I really didn't understand it. I didn't put the effort into learning it. I had a good friend of mine who was an economist, and he was so astute when it came to investment and everything. And he passed. And then I realized, you know, it's something I need to acquire knowledge and information about. I mean, I'm not a young girl anymore.
The problem with it, Daphne, is that most people find it boring.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm one of the people who's a bit crazy, and I don't find it boring at all. But
right. And I have another girlfriend that I'm hoping you'll get to meet sometime. She's a woman, mm-hmm. but she got it together. That, just like you, she know it all about it, you know?
That reminds me of a question you asked at some other time, mm-hmm. one of our broadcasts, the greatest interest from women or from men?
Right.
And I said I thought men, because as a broker, most of my clients were men. However,
right.
I have to tell you something. I have a book that I give away from my website, and
right.
it's kind of surprising me because it's proving extremely popular,
mm-hmm.
With more than 300 people a month are downloading the book. And
mm.
the majority of them, Daphne, are women.
Women, because women are getting savvy, financially savvy now. You know?
I'll tell you something else about it, Daphne, that surprised me. Although I have no way to know this as a fact, I think they are older women because of the names.
Yep.
You know, you could there are certain names that are for young people and.
Really?
At any one time, and certain that have
so
been.
So I wonder
what
group am I in? Am I in the young girl's name or the old woman name?
I would say you're in the middle somewhere.
Oh,
and I've
right.
got to be very careful when I'm talking. I've got to be very careful when I talk to a woman.
Now you better be. You're going to be in big trouble. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But when you have a name, well, I better be careful. I better not mention names.
There are certain names they used to be pronounced one day. Now, all of a sudden, they start pronouncing them another way now.
Yes.
There
are some names that you recognize as being likely belonging to somebody who's 60 or 70 years old.
Yeah. But the other thing too, Sydney, people are living longer now because
yes, they are.
people who are 70, 75, 80, they are the new 45. So, and that's one of the reasons now for the boom in wanting to get more information to add on to what we have. You know?
Our two most recent coaching clients, one is a widow. And the other one is a divorcee of some time. And both of them have had to be now interested in investing. They've had to be. It's a shame that it comes that way rather than as an interest rather than a necessity. But, you know, there it is. That's the way it is. One of the things that is of interest, of course, is that on balance, women tend to live longer than men, and ultimately finish up looking after the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
yeah.
I think that women really need to learn something about how to manage that wealth.
Exactly.
And
unless they're going to get some of the young boys coming to look for a cougar and to go spend the money. So we better get it all together. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And the knowledge is protection. I told you about the new widow who, the beginning broker, managed to lose all her money for her very quickly.
That's right.
With
and they
knowledge,
go around and they prize on you know the widows.
Yeah.
Sydney,
yes.
You have 3.5 minutes remaining, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that what we talked
give
about
out,
tonight
remember
is
to give your information how they can get in touch with you.
Oh, sure. I have to remember, I've got so many websites. Sydney.
Oh, look at you.
What was that?
I say, oh, look at you, I said.
It's Sydney, SYDNEY, just like Australia, at Wealthy Investor Weekly. Yeah, I've got so many, I really do. Wealthy Investor
You are too funny.
Com. Well, I didn't mean to do that, but there we go. So, Sydney at WealthyInvestorWeekly.com. That's WealthyInvestor Weekly, WeekleyKLY.com.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, if you can remember that, Daphne, you can repeat it for everybody.
Oh, my Lord. Sydney.
Okay,
Sydney,
now you know why I did that. You know why I did
investor,
that.
WealthyInvestorWeekly.com.
You got
yes?
it. You know why I did that, to see if everybody else would remember it. Sydney.
See, you just messing with me.
Investor.
Don't be messing with me like that.
Sydney at WealthyInvestorWeekly.com.
That's what I said, my friend.
Yes, you did. We'll give you a gold star for that. Now, it would be very helpful if listeners do have questions. I would love to be able to answer them on the show next week or whenever. So it would help me, and hopefully I'll have good answers for you.
You have 90 seconds, my dear.
I'm not going to sing, I promise you that.
Why not? And I was ready to be serenaded.
Because the audio readers would switch off in a hurry. So what we've talked about tonight was fees for mutual funds and mm-hmm. the fact that you need to grill, if necessary, that very nice salesperson with a nice dark
That's right.
suit and a big white smile. Find
and don't
out
be pressured
what the fees
into, exactly. Don't be pressured into investing until you have all your questions answered.
You avoid buying mutual funds near the end of the year, or you may pay taxes that really somebody else should have paid earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. You're paying taxes on bare profit. Mm-hmm. You can actually lose money and still pay taxes on bare profit. So
right.
be careful with that.
Be careful. Be careful. All right.
Dollar cost.
Oh, bless you. Your time is up, my friend. You have 14 seconds.
Then I'll shut up and say thank you for the listeners for their time,
yeah.
and I hope I've helped.
Good, and I'll see you next week, my friend. Be well.
I'll see you, Daphne, and be glad to see everybody else, too. Bye-bye
okay.
now.
Okay. All right. Good night. So you all heard it here. Be sure. Ask the questions before you invest. So long, everybody. Bye-bye.